Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. And by Hyundai. Experience the 2011 Hyundai Sonata today at HyundaiSonata.com.
This is Auto Line After Hours with John McElroy, episode 122 for October 13, 2011. It's the water, stupid. Watch Autoline After Hours live at AutolineDetroit.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time or 2300 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline After Hours in the iTunes Store. Hey, great having everybody back with us, especially great having my co-pilot here, Mr. DiLorenzo.
Good to see you, John.
It's good to be here, man.
Great to be alive.
Great to be alive. And
in Farmington Hills.
In Farmington Hills. We left Livonia.
In the new world headquarters of the Autoline Empire.
The growing Autoline Empire.
And it's going to be a while, folks.
Right.
But we're here.
We're going to take it all over. Resistance is futile. But yeah, we're in a new building, and we're still getting it together. You can see there's boxes here and there, and we're sitting on an Autoline set, not an after-hours set. But we'll get there. We're putting it all together.
We'll get there.
But will the UAW get there, man? That's been the news all this week, and especially today. It's just like crazy, it seems, what's going on.
Well,
with Ford.
Yes. To all you readers out there who are chastising me all week about the enlightened UAW, I don't know. I think I can rest my case. First of all, there was the bogus rumor that emanated from UAW, which they're now doing their best to deny.
Backtrack on.
That Ford was going to hire scab laborers.
Right.
And then the UAW backed away from that. But in the meantime, their big, probably, if not the most important plant, certainly one of the top three.
Rejected. Overwhelmingly.
Rejected the contract. So
Chicago plant, where they make the Taurus and all.
Yeah.
And 77% against.
Isn't it the Explorer too?
No. You could be right.
Yeah, I think it is. Don't they make the Taurus, Explorer, Flex?
We'll have somebody have the chat room look that up for us.
But I get what I said, and I've said repeatedly. They made a deal that was an agreement of convenience, because they can't go back, except. The UAW's just decided that they're going back. So,
well, it's the membership. I mean, obviously, the leadership hammered out this agreement, and they said, oh, yeah, everyone's going to approve this. And, you know, who knows where it's all going to go? I think we've only seen 10% of the workers so far vote on it, so there's a lot to go.
But that's
so far it's losing.
That's a key plan.
55% against, more or less, to 45% for.
Yeah, so... Please spare me with the Enlightenment stories, because I'm not buying it.
Well, the other thing that was amazing, you're right, there was a statement on Facebook yesterday from Jimmy Settles, who's the vice president at the UAW, who runs the Ford department, as we call it. And, he had some statement attributed to him where he said, Ford negotiated in good faith and... If you guys reject the contract, we're going to go on strike, and they could even hire, they called them temporary workers. Well, that's scab labor to come in. And then, like you said, it got out. You know, Bloomberg got it. The Detroit News had it. We had it on Autoline Daily today. And then they went, whoa, doggy. That was posted by mistake, they said.
Yeah, what a bunch of, never mind.
And then the other thing is Sergio and his guys look like they know how to negotiate better than GM and Ford. They got a much better deal out of the union, so it would seem.
And Remember when we were talking about when Sergio was basically standing there like the schoolboy with his hand out when they handed him Chrysler for no money? I mean, I thought the plan all along was this was going to be the new Fiat because Fiat was imploding. And sure enough, you know, now they're saying the profits generated by Chrysler is keeping the whole Fiat thing afloat.
Oh, I said that 2 years ago, that just give it time and Chrysler will be bailing out Fiat. And I said all along that even if Fiat remains healthy, Chrysler has far more profit-generating capability.
Potential, yeah.
Because it just sells a whole lot more expensive cars than Fiat does.
Well, and Fiat's perpetually teetering on the brink for, what, 35 years? If it wasn't for Ferrari.
Well, yeah, but I'll give Marchionne his credit. You know, since that guy came in, financially, he turned it around. Now, part of that... remember GM had to cough up $2 billion to get out of a contract.
Yeah, they love that.
That didn't hurt. But, $2 billion in the big scheme of things over years isn't what counts. But he's made Fiat pretty efficient, and that's with these Italian unions of albatrosses around his neck, especially Fion, the communists who are just... they're hilarious to listen to.
Yeah, I know. But now, you know, Fiat could go out of business.
Mm-mm-mm.
Well, no, I mean, no. Out of business in terms of contributing anything. I mean, Chrysler's going to be there, and Chrysler's right. going to generate the profits, and they're going to prop up Fiat.
Yeah, well, I think the biggest thing that's hurting Fiat is it's building decent cars now. All the J.D. Power stuff in Europe and whatnot shows their quality's good and whatnot. But they've got these unions that have, I mean, you think the UAW's bad. They've got four UAWs, you know, different unions in that they have to deal with nationally. Some of their plants have as many as six unions in them.
I know. Well, there's a reason that Sergio and his group are going to run the whole empire from Auburn Hills.
Are they really?
I'm absolutely certain of it.
Well, you know, that wouldn't surprise me. And he's used that threat that if Italy doesn't get its act together and make it more... encouraging and inviting for business. Yeah,
they won't get their act together. They won't.
Do you say that as an Italian?
Yes, I know our strengths and weaknesses, and boy, I'll tell you what, whatever's going on over there with the unions, it's just out of hand, has been for years and years and years. I mean, Ferrari is a miracle.
It is a miracle.
It is a miracle. And cutting edge, brilliant technology.
Consistently
great. And it's a national treasure, but the rest of it just comes apart.
Yeah. Well, you know, Italy's always struck me kind of like England in a way, that when they work on, when it's little companies doing highly specialized stuff, get out of the way. You can't beat them. They're so good. But when they organize into big, large groups, that's when it really seems to break down.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, at the end of the day, I wish Sergio and company the best because, you know, it helps this region and it helps keeps this region, you know, on an upward swing. But, boy, I'll tell you what. Yeah, I predict they'll run the whole enterprise out of Auburn Hills, I have no doubt. And he will basically turn his back on the union and say, you guys are trouble and we're just moving forward.
Yeah. Well, he definitely negotiated. He out-negotiated Bob King. And now what we're hearing is that the Chrysler agreement was almost the same as what was presented on September 14th. So the unions wasted about a month to get back to where it was.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why I just think this union's in deep trouble because Bob King's talked about it being new and innovative and cooperative and... I don't see it. And, you know, I say that, you know, in trying to encourage him, like, hey, if you want this thing to survive, you got to walk the talk. And so far it's just been
Let alone sign up any transplants. That's
not forget
happening.
About that. That's not
I mean, he
happen.
Put his stake in the ground on that, and that's just... That's
Look little. How much time it's chewing up for these companies devoting to these contracts. It's a massive headache. Massive headache.
And all those transplant companies are going to say,
Yeah, we don't want to do that.
Yeah. Not offhand, really.
Hey, another good news thing, though, that came out is Detroit Grand Prix.
Yeah.
Coming back. Roger Penske, what, with Chevrolet sponsorship?
Yeah, well, that was the only way it was going to happen. And this was engineered by Mark Royce, to his credit. he got with Roger and said, I really want to make this happen. And, you know, Mark deserves all the credit. And, of course, Roger, I think people outside this town and outside racing do not understand how much Roger invests in money and time to help this community.
It's amazing. I mean, it's amazing. He's not from Michigan. He's not from Detroit for sure, but he puts an awful lot of effort in trying to help the city.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a great thing for the city. You know, I threw out some cautions on my fumes column. I mean, let's face it, getting on and off the island is a nightmare. And, you know, you can spin it all you want, but it's very difficult. And it's a pain in the ass, frankly.
Take the bus.
Yeah, well, even that.
Actually, the bus isn't half bad.
Yeah, I know.
If you drive yourself, it is.
But if you're prepared at the end of the day, sitting out in the sun, baking your brains and having too many beers and then waiting 35 minutes in line.
For the bus, that's true. You got to time it right.
But net, it's great for the city. I think the undercard leaves a lot to be desired. I mean, the World Challenge had promise at one time, but now it's like a glorified... club racing, and GM is saddled with their investment in that with the Cadillac CTSV race cars. You know, they have no business running that series. I mean, that series isn't big enough for that. And so GM, you know, the backstory is there's a lot of problems. But the good story is Mark Royce and Roger Penske put this together, and Chevrolet's going to sponsor it, and it's on the calendar the weekend after Indy. 2012.
So, yeah, weekend after Indy, which will be IndyCars, and are they doing the ALMS too?
No, because ALMS that's a test day for Le Mans. So GM called up Jim France, and he was says, "Sure, I'll bring up the Grand Am for you boys up there." And so they'll have a Grand Am, they'll have the World Challenge, and the Indy Lights. So it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting.
Should be good.
Yeah.
With Roger Penske, you know it's going to be good.
Well, getting Chevrolet to basically GM Chevrolet to sponsor is good. And there's another presenting sponsor who I won't mention because they're pissed me off so much. I refuse to mention freaking losers. Anyway.
We need to talk about Bob Nardelli and the idiot stuff that he's been saying. But first, let's thank one of our sponsors, for being able to bring all of you this show. And Ben, let's especially give a shout out to our friends at Bridgestone.
Look at this. Bridgestone's using natural rubber, researching ways to enhance its quality and performance, and making their factories more environmentally friendly, producing products that save on fuel and emissions, and some that can be reused again. And promoting eco-friendly and safety driving campaigns. One team, one planet. Bridgestone.
So anyway, Bob Nardelli.
Minimum Bob surfaces again.
What a dope. I mean, he comes out and some reporter runs into him at...
David Shepherdson.
David Shepherdson from the Detroit News.
David, you know, I've never met him, but he does some great stuff.
I think he does some of the best stuff out there, for the industry.
Yeah, absolutely.
Covering the industry, I mean.
Yeah.
But, he runs into Nardelli.
At an investor conference in New York, right? And he corrals him off the sidelines.
Right. And then Nardelli says, they should have never given Chrysler to Fiat. Cerber should have gotten it. They should have gotten the same deal, and they could have done as well as what's going on now.
Or better.
And then, so anyway, Jason Vine sees this thing and he goes off the nut. So there's this website out there called MichiganView.org, and it's a bunch of self-appointed pundits like Jason.
And I think they've picked up some of my columns, too. I've never...
Yeah, no, it's not a bad website. If you want some provocative reading, check it out. But so Jason posts this rant of his against Nardelli there. Manny Lopez, who runs the editorial page at the Detroit News, sees it, goes, oh, my God, this is so good. Blop, slaps it on the editorial page. And then I went semi-viral. I mean, semi-within, because it went viral within the industry. And then... Nardelli had to backtrack fast from his statements.
Yeah, because it was ludicrous. I mean, let's face it, Cerberus had no business going anywhere near Chrysler.
No, they had no idea what they were getting into.
You know, they thought they could get in, discard the stuff that didn't work, and spruce it up a little bit, turn it around, and walk away with a nice payoff.
Right.
They denied that. They couched it at, oh, we're doing this for America. We believe in America. You were at a DAC press conference Nardelli made his debut, and he said that their chairman believed in this. This is something personal to him, and this is we're doing this for America.
Meanwhile, the entire investment community is going, no, they're just buying it for Chrysler Financial. They're going to throw the rest away.
Which is basically what they tried to do. And, you know, and in the meantime, while they were stewards over it, they decided, well, we're going to play in the car business because, you know, this is a no-brainer. We can figure this out. And they, you know, they basically ran it right into the ground, and it's just...
They got their heads handed to them.
Yeah. And for him to turn around and say, well, we could have done it. We would have done it better than Marchionne. You know, I've been critical of Sergio Marchionne, but he has forgotten more than any of the cumulative Cerberus brain trust could ever amass about the auto industry. Sergio's forgotten more than these guys will ever know. So it's just... What a bonehead.
I mean, to me, one of the interesting comparisons of knowing the car business is Nardelli got into this phony baloney stuff that they had this full-blown electric car program, and they were partnering with General Electric, and it had this breakthrough battery, and it was all smoke and mirrors. And, you know...
It was total vaporware. And everybody in the business knew it.
Well, you know, we sure know it now. I don't, you know, at the time it was hard to tell, were they really doing it or not?
Yeah, but even at the time it was just like, come on, where's the beef? There's no beef there.
Right. But it was just funny to see Nardelli, you know, backing off the stuff, what he had said so fast. I'm sure he had no idea, you know, how this was going to blow up in his face.
Well, he has a high image of himself. I don't know why. Well, maybe if someone paid you $220 million to go away, Home Depot did.
Right.
I don't know. It was just a train wreck from the beginning. And he just opened up the whole can of worms all over again.
Yeah, yeah. No doubt.
And David Shepardson's probably sitting there with his tape recorder going, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Keep talking.
Yeah, right. Well, we ought to segue into bringing our guest on right now.
Yes, the elusive roaster Jack.
Yeah, Jack, come on board.
From Great Norco Coffee in Traverse City, Jack has been a friend of Auto Extremists and Autoline for several years now. And he should repeat that Deming espresso quality thing. That's, I can't, that was unbelievable. But Jack, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here. It's been a while of coffee, and I call it a pen pal caffeinated relationship, basically.
Yeah.
I've been, it's really Peter who opened my eyes to all the stuff that happens in the auto industry. I've always been a big car fan, and I remember I got into coffee in Montana. I'm from Traverse City, but moved out west to play in the snow and ended up rooming with a coffee roaster. And that was where it came into my life and really was intriguing, and I've been having fun ever since. But it was living out there when Auto Extremist came to life. And I don't remember how I found it, but I was glued to it. And then moved back to Michigan and started Great Northern Roasting, my wife and I did. And I'm actually a TIG welder by trade. So that's
really
cool.
Yes. So
TIG welding to coffee.
I
can taste the difference.
What a country.
Oh, yes. But so we moved back to Michigan to find a house. I got a job doing basic assembly work as a TIG welder, and then, but kept coming back to Peter's site and just learned all these things that nobody talks about. And so it was really fun. And then I remember when you quit. And I was just like, what do I do now? So I sent you some coffee. And
I came back.
Yep. That's all it took.
So, resuscitated you.
After getting into the business and really I'm kind of hard-headed. I have this knack for needing to sign my own checks and, you know, running into the same wall repeatedly. But I ended up befriending a retired dual corporate slash union employee from a Lansing boy who worked in the Oldsmobile plant, and ended up retiring as head of quality control for his section of the factory, who worked directly with Ed Deming and Bill Schirkenbach. I believe it's his last name.
I think it's Schirkenbach. I think that's right. And, you know, it was Dr. W. Edwards Deming.
Exactly.
You know, and he'll have you know that's exactly how you say it. But Deming, of course, is one of the geniuses of statistical process control in any form of manufacturing or process control. And, he went to Japan in the 1950s and transformed them. In fact, they give a Deming Award for the top quality in Japan.
And learning about that just was fascinating to me, and so it was put to me very plainly. This gentleman shows up in my garage where I'm roasting coffee and says, "I had some of your coffee in this place called the Phoenix Cafe on Crystal Lake, and I have to know more." And I was busy doing all sorts of things, and he just stood there and looked around. And he said, "This is wonderful." It was a mess, and he said, "This is wonderful. This looks just like what I used to do in the shop." And he started all of it by saying, "You can create a process analyzation of brushing your teeth and go from there." So we, once a week, would get together in his kitchen. He had a beautiful home espresso setup, and we essentially learned more about espresso than I ever thought was possible. And I've been hooked on it ever since, and it's been a lot of fun. And I'm really big on American manufacturing. We use American-made roasters. We carry an American-made espresso machine.
And, wow! Who would know there is even such a thing?
It's a pretty, it's a very lively and intense segment, and not just because of the caffeine, but there's there's been some serious technological advancements in terms of manufacturing and quality control that apply directly to how you brew under pressure, and the espresso process is very harsh, but it's also very young. And there has not been much from a manufacturing or engineering standpoint done to change the process of brewing under pressure until basically the last 15 to 20 years. Hmm. And today we can control everything that happens to the coffee down to tenths of a degree in Fahrenheit or Celsius, and the temperature of the water, the amount of pressure we want to run through it, and how all these little intricate details change what happens in the cup. And it's all about the experience at that point. So you can go way off the deep end, but
so
once
where is this espresso machine made in the U.S.?
It's manufactured in Seattle. It's called a Synesso. And as a matter of fact,
what's it called?
Synesso, S-Y-N-N-E-S-S-O. And the gentleman who it's a husband and wife team who founded the company was actually a technician for the godfather of Italian espresso machines in North America, this company called La Marzocco. And when Starbucks went on their world domination tour in the late 80s into the 90s, La Marzocco established a factory in Washington where this gentleman worked. And he went to his superiors saying, "We, at the time, literally built the world's best espresso machine, but there's some things about this I don't like, and I know we could make them better." And they said, "That's very nice of you, silly American. We invented this. Go back to your job." And within about 2 years of that, the writing was on the wall that Starbucks was heading into automation and using what are called super automatic espresso machines and drifting away from the craftsman-oriented production methodology to push-button preparation. And he saw the writing on the wall, and he and his wife basically mortgaged their house, built the first prototype, took it to some very prominent coffee individuals in the area, got their endorsement, and today there's basically two machines you can buy if you want to play the game seriously and be taken seriously in the specialty coffee industry, and it's La Marzocco, the Italians, and Synesso. So they succeeded in putting them on notice, and what's unique is they actually ship about 40% of their manufacturing to Australia.
Wow.
Australia has essentially stolen the caffeinated nation crown from Italy. the rule of thumb, and I say this without having been there, but the rule of thumb is if there's a cash machine in Australia, in the business, if there's a cash machine, there's an espresso machine as well. And they're wonderful coffee people. They're a blast to hang out with. But the United States currently is still where all of the leading innovation is happening as an industry with that's tied to serious agricultural business. It's really pretty amazing how it all comes together. So as I spent a lot of time, you know, wishing I was doing something with a new car, and I didn't have the patience to go through all the engineering schooling, and I didn't really want to be a marketer, though I've decided I have a bright future in marketing. I read all the Auto Extremists and then started spreading, you know, a little bit of that knowledge to the things I do and learn from things that just come from the most interesting places. But as we got better, it started to really make sense how process controls everything. And if you can really get a handle on what it is that you know you want to achieve, then you can just distill everything down to its basic element, bring everybody involved to the table, be open and honest, and just process refinement is what it becomes. And through, it's been 10 years of roasting coffee as Great Northern Roasting, and I still enjoy it, so I'm very fortunate in that respect. But I've been a car nut since I was a little kid.
So you like Buicks? Is that what I heard?
I do like Buicks.
What got you into that?
My old man.
Because he had a Buick.
He grew up in a Buick Mercedes dealership in Dayton, Ohio. He and his four brothers, his dad ran a dealership, Davis Buick. And the story goes there were two gull wings, one for the showroom and one for the driveway. But there was always by the time the boys, there's four boys, by the time they were old enough to work there or drive, there was always a string of muscle cars going through the showroom. And I remember, and I believe it was an 83 280Z Turbo that I was just asking him about recently. I remember getting in trouble. I was really young for fingerprinting the hell out of it and just crawling all over this car. And he would take me for rides in it. So I got to the point where I would sneak into the garage and use my shirt to not fingerprint it and climb in the car and hold on to the steering wheel. And then from there, as I got older, to the point where I got my driver's license, he went through a lot of street rods. And that was a lot of fun. And learning how to just learn how to detail everything. And I hated doing it. But when you were done, it was really pretty amazing when you notice what it takes to take care of a vehicle. And then in the last few years, really started paying attention to where the muscle car era just kind of lived and breathed, and it is all before my time. But when you show up in a car that is older than you, the older guys notice it, and especially when it's in good shape. Doesn't matter if it's hot rod or not. But everybody that is my age or younger, they can't quite put their finger on it. They say they don't care about cars; they care about phones. But when you show up in a slick piece of iron, everybody just says, "Wow, what is that?"
Yeah, well, we've talked about that. You know, the manufacturers trying to reach the young people who get more turned on about their phones than.
But that's a great point. Give them a great piece of rolling sculpture to look at. You know, with a car that's cool.
Even the most ardent. Oh, I'm not a car person. Type. If they see the right car, they go, "Wow,"
Right.
Yeah, I don't care how adamant they are, anti-car, whatever. There's always one car that gets somebody's motor running.
That's right. Hey, we got to take a break right now, and we'll continue this. But Ben, why don't we give a shout out to our friends at Chevrolet?
Not only does the Chevrolet Cruze offer a ton of features, it features some of the best safety and maintenance in the business. The Cruze comes with rear park assist, which beeps if you're about to back into something. It has rollover mitigation, which means the car senses if it might roll over, and applies the brakes to the outside front tire to bring the car back under control. And it has OnStar vehicle diagnostics, which sends you emails about the latest status of your car. And you can learn a lot more about it at Chevrolet.com/Cruze.
Yeah, thanks again for Chevy. and Mark Royce and Roger Penske for bringing the Grand Prix to Detroit next summer. By the way, this just in, Danica Patrick has set the fastest practice speed in the opening session at Las Vegas, which is the last weekend of the series, which is a battle between
Frank Keating
and Will Power. But now you have to understand, this is a 1.5 mile oval, Las Vegas. She turned a lap of 224.719 miles per hour.
Wow.
And her quote is, "It's friggin' fast out there. It's almost Indy speeds out there. Nothing would let me turn the page than winning here," because she's going to NASCAR. But
right.
If you know anything about racing, even if you don't, that is friggin' fast.
That is
on a 1.5 mile.
Outrageously quick.
Yes.
That is blistering fast. So
because that's a lot of time in the turns in a track that size rather than a super speedway.
So you got some Buicks on? We're showing some of your Buicks?
Yes, actually.
Interesting thing. My father, he was in the UPI, United Press International, and then the Kudner PR agency sought him out and hired him. And his first assignment was Buick. And then eventually he met Harlow Curtis, who was way back then the general manager of Buick, and they developed a very close friendship. And then when Harlow Curtis became chairman of General Motors, he called my dad up and said, "You want to run PR for GM?" And that's
how it happened, huh? Yeah, I didn't know that background.
And my dad was the youngest VP up until that point in GM history.
Hmm.
Only John, at 40, only John DeLorean.
I was going to say.
Succeeded him at 39.
Wow.
Wow.
Although I think over at Ford, didn't Iacocca make VP at 32?
Yeah, probably.
I
was talking about the GM.
But at GM, you're talking right. But yeah, Jack, you got some cars, huh?
I'm privy to a handful of Buicks.
And I think we've got some pictures of them here. Ben, why don't we bring that up?
There's a light yellow 61. There it is, 61 special. That's a 364 Nailhead. Really a wonderful vehicle.
What's a Nailhead?
It was a V8. It was a 315 horsepower V8. There it is.
Hmm.
Then that car gets a lot of looks. It's pretty much bone stock, original engine. As a matter of fact, all the ones we'll see are original engine, and it makes people stop and look at it and say, "God, it's huge!" You know, you can fit.
Yeah, but that was like a mainstream sedan back then.
And it goes down the road beautifully. It can be a little tricky to get around in tight spaces, but it makes people ask, "Wow, what is that?" And one of my favorite elements of that car is the power bulge on the hood. Is pretty damn close to the power bulge on the 61 Corvette. I'm pretty sure it's the same mold or same die. But, I mean, it's dining table big. And then there's a 67 Grand Sport 340, which they call the Junior Grand Sport. And that only came in two colors. It was Platinum Mist, which is the gray. There it is with the new GS.
Huh.
Did you get the new GS?
No, as a matter of fact, that took place at a bed and breakfast at a winery just north of Traverse City, and it's where I met Chip. I was delivering coffee there on a Saturday, and I pulled into the winery, and there were all these Buick flags, and there was one new GS.
They knew you were
there.
Coming.
Yeah. And I ran into the kitchen and talked to the staff, and I said, "What the hell's going on here?" And they said, "Oh, there's all kinds of people here. They're driving this new car, and... there's the 67. So I ran back into town, got the car, and then crashed the party. and a couple guys came up and asked about it. And Phil Colley, I believe was his name, was the communication director there for Buick. Mm-hmm. He got to ride in it for about 100 feet. Mm-hmm. And it was really unique to see the Buick people not know how to touch it. It It was fun. And that car has a 4-speed in it, and it's a lot more fun with a 4-speed.
Wow.
Than the Power Glide that it originally came with.
Oh, so originally, I was going to say, with the 4-speed, that's got to be an awful rare car. But, right.
Yeah, it's 4 disc drums or 4 drum brakes, mm-hmm. and it can be a handful if you're not paying attention because it's pretty strong. But then that the winery event, all the GSs were back, the 2012s. And here's one of this kind of Godfather type vehicles from the brand sitting there, and that's what was funny is I met the Buick communications guy, told him who I was, told him what episodes I'd watched, and I follow Autoline. He goes, "Oh, the guys are here." So I walked over, and Chip and Adam,
Andrew,
thank you, were there, and I walked up, was introduced to this table, and I said, "Hey, I'm Roaster Jack," and they jumped to their feet, said, "We drink your coffee," and. Yeah, so this is my shameless plug. Some progressive manufacturer in this area, and they don't know, they might not know who they are yet, but they need an on-site roaster. But, and then there's a 71 GS Stage 1, which is actually a 1970 spec car that started out in, it's red with a vinyl top. Today it's as a matter of fact, yesterday was the first time it was on the road. There's the car right now.
Mm-hmm.
That is a Mistwood green, if I remember the actual color. And the pictures don't do it justice. In person, there's a mile of clear coat on that car, and it looks fabulous. But you know, on screen or on paper, it's pea soup green. And when you stand next to it, it's not even the same vehicle. But that's a 455, and that's got a new Tremec 5-speed in it, and it's a monster. And a guy named Jeff Johnson in Traverse City rebuilt that car and had a lot of fun with it, did a hell of a job. And so out of those three cars, we have this unique heritage. When you look at that Buick grill, there was a time when it really meant a lot more to the whole country than it really does right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun to know. And that was another thing that was pointed out through the whole learning how to do process evaluation. Know your roots. Figure out where all of the information you have comes from. Get the history. And because a lot of the guys in the very beginning really were brilliant, but they only had so much to work with. And today, the technology that we have to keep these things on the road, along with what's out there on the road now, it's a whole new world.
Yeah, it really is. It's amazing how long cars last these days,
you know,
and how much better they are. I mean, they really are. They're just so much more robust than they ever were.
I've spent quite a bit of time in that 67, and you got to watch the brake fluid. It doesn't, like, start when it's hot. You know, it runs like an old car.
Yeah. Yeah, we've forgotten how... used to have to change the points and plugs and a whole bunch of other stuff. And that's why I always say, whenever they tell me, boy, they don't build them like they used to, I always say, yep.
Yeah, you're right about that.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Hey, it's that part of the program where we need to get to all the questions from the audience. Actually, why don't we take a quick break before we get to that? Because I don't want to interrupt rapid fire once it gets going. And, Ben, why don't we thank our friends at Hyundai? With gas prices where they are these days, if you're after fuel efficiency, you need to check out the Hyundai Sonata. There's three different models to choose from. The 2.4-liter GDI, which delivers a segment-leading 35 miles per gallon. Then there's the 2-liter turbo, which offers 274 horsepower, yet delivers 33 miles per gallon. And the brand new hybrid that provides a combined 37 miles per gallon. And you can learn a lot more about each one at HyundaiSonata.com. Okay, now let's get to rapid fire. Ben, let's bring that up. Okay, and Roaster Jack, you can jump in on any of these, too, if you got anything. Speed Buggy on Twitter wants to know, what's our latest take on Fisker? And you saw Fisker on the road already. Mm-hmm. So he says, what's your latest take on Fisker? I think it would be a great design language for Lincoln. Would any of the established OEMs bite?
No, I mean, you know, Fisker is the greatest automotive genius known to man. Just ask him. I think the car is a good long car, no question, but where they go and how they, if they carve out this green intelligentsia, the rich green intelligentsia, they have a chance at survival, but beyond that,
I don't think so.
The future is here for those who can afford it.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good point, too. This is
but,
really
you know,
expensive.
He'll go through the first on the block people.
Yes.
And then what? I don't know.
Well, you know, I always say if you want to break into the automotive business, you got to bring something new to the party, something that nobody else has done. And styling doesn't count, guess what? Because styling can be copied or it can be outdone. You got to have more than just styling.
Yeah.
I don't see where they've got any more than that.
No.
I really don't. Okay, Bad Nickel on Twitter says, the Chevy Spark EV press release said, details on specific markets, range, quantities, and pricing will be announced later. He says, why are they announcing it now? Meaning the car without those details.
Because they brought in a bunch of journalists into Detroit and Warren for a three-day celebration of Chevy's 100th.
I didn't get invited to that.
Oh, I did, and I turned it down. It was so convoluted, and I'm sorry. I mean, when you live in a vacuum like they do, where they eat, breathe their own stuff every day, they think that bringing in a bunch of journalists for in two waves for over 1.5 days each is really the right thing to do, and I think it's the wrong thing to do. So they announced it because they were talking about the global Chevy, and they had to have something to talk about, so they did.
Yeah, but they had nothing to talk about because they said, here's the car, and we're not telling you anything about it.
It's like, you know, show and tell. We're going to do this sometime down the road, so it'll be cool. Thank you very much. And then that was it.
Yeah, I thought it was odd.
Well, and then some journalists got to go to the Monday Night Football game.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's cool.
Yeah, and then some got to go to the Tiger game. So, whatever.
Yeah, I don't know.
A lot to sit through for for a Tiger game.
Well, you know, I find it interesting that after GM puts all this money into the Volt and says the smartest solution is an extended range EV, then they announced they're going to do this Spark pure battery electric, but only in very limited quantities and only select markets in the world. So they know this thing's not going to sell. That's the other puzzle. Why even do it if you know it's not going to sell?
I know.
Well,
okay.
Also doing that car sharing announcement from a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder maybe there's some specific community that they've connected the dots
to. Well, that wouldn't be a bad idea. You know, they could get a lot of publicity out of it.
They need it all.
Well, no, that's not a bad thought at all, that they could use Spark battery electrics for that program.
I think they should have called it the Sparky.
Okay, Bad Nickel on Twitter. Oh, no, that's just the one I asked. Sean Sweeney says, for either John or Peter, the next Mustang due in calendar year 2014-15 will be all new from the ground up, including the suspension. IRS, finally. When Jason May says, none retro, it scares the Mustang faithful. I'm with Peter on a total revamp, but still looks like a Mustang. Which cues should they keep and which need to go?
You know, I'm not going to single any out. I mean, I think the fact that they're not doing a retro car is very important. I think the fact that the rear suspension is going to be IRS is very important. I expect a forward-looking take on the Mustang, and there'll be just enough that the Mustang faithful will be pleased. And if you really need a cheat sheet, go look at that Ford Evos concept from the middle of the roof back. And that might give you a hint at where they're going.
Where the Mustang's going, right.
Yeah.
Very pronounced rear fender flares.
Haunches.
You know, fastback, the DLO especially, right.
But it's going to look new. It's not going to look retro.
Well, what I thought was fascinating when we had Jack Telnack, who used to run Ford Design on the show, because that's one of the things I asked him, well, you always have to have a long hood and short deck, don't you? And he was like, no, you don't.
No, you don't.
And I was shocked to hear that, Because I thought that would be one of the basic proportions that you would always keep on the Mustang.
You'll see a horse on it, I know that much. Somewhere.
Well, you know, what do the Mustang faithful want? It's something like it's got to have 9 galloping ponies on it.
Yeah, whatever.
They go off the nut.
They need to get over themselves on that.
Okay, a guy who calls himself the mayor of Annapolis, Maryland, says, smart move, Bathurst on speed. Dumbest move, Bathurst on speed. He says, smart move because made him think that someone at speed finally gets it. One of the best races in the world finally covered properly. He says, some of the high-def shots from the helicopter were breathtaking. He said it was the dumbest move because if the NASCAR nation watched this race and got a taste of what racing really looks like, there may be riots coming.
You know, I think it's cool that they put it on the air, but, you know, NASCAR nation won't be fazed. You know, they would have to have a steady diet of it for it to sink in.
Got to learn who the drivers are and their personalities. I mean, you got to bring it alive, but it is an awesome venue.
Well, yeah, but also I've said the supercar, V8 supercar formula should be NASCAR right now. But, you know, they won't do it. It's not invented here. Mm-hmm. You know, they just won't do it.
Hey, we got some phone calls coming in. So, Ben, why don't we bring in one of those?
Hi, this is George from Los Angeles. I happened to test drive a Nissan Leaf at the Alternative Auto Show in Santa Monica this weekend. I guess it was last weekend, and I just got to say, I was shocked. It actually is the only electric car I've ever driven that doesn't pretend to look be an electric car, just pretends to be a car, and it does a great job of it. And I have to say, if I was really in the market for a car now, it's something like $25,000 after a $10,000 rebate, I'd just get one. It was a great car. I wonder what you thought of it. Thanks.
Yeah, I've driven the Leaf extensively. I think it's a fantastic car. I don't agree with your comment that it doesn't try to look like something different. It very much tries to look like something different. And some people may not like the styling, but that's okay. That's why they make vanilla and chocolate ice cream. But, you know, as you said, a $10,000 rebate, well, that's a taxpayer rebate. Thank you very much. And that's my whole question on these electric cars. What happens when the government subsidies dry up? Not just subsidies to you, the buyer, but the subsidies for the charger in your garage, as well as the subsidy to the battery company that made the battery, as well as the subsidy to the car company that made it. And, I mean, I just don't see electrics catching on. Not this decade.
It's going to be a niche thing for another 25 years.
But having said that, I think electrics are really cool. You know, you can do a lot with the electric motors. You can completely change the architecture of a car, which I find really exciting.
Yeah, they're cool.
Quiet.
They're
I like
cool.
that, too.
So limited use.
Right. If somebody, if the battery breakthrough comes or they figure out some other breakthrough where you just hit them with defibrillators and they recharge instantly, or some other way of storing energy, we'll go electric. But it's
we're going to have ICEs for
a long
next
time,
40 to 50 years.
Right.
I find it pretty unique how many people don't quite understand what electricity does. And I'd be curious to know how many people walk away from an EV purchase when they find out what it's going to take to outfit their garage. And do you need to put a sub panel in? Who's
going
to
be?
Well,
no, if you get in early, it's fine. Because, like, here in Michigan right now, our local electric utility, DTE, will put one in your garage for free.
Oh.
It's a $2,500 value. You don't have to worry. But you better go out and buy your electric now.
Yeah.
Because those subsidies are not going to last. But I'll say this. If you got the money and you can get the subsidy and you don't have a long driving range, you might love that Leaf. I mean, or Volt. I think they're kind of cool.
I love the Bolt. I thought it was cool. Is it going to be my only vehicle? No.
There's two rolling around Traverse.
Yeah. Okay, Mohammed asks, with Chery intending to enter the European market, will they succeed like Hyundai or fail like Proton? Proton! Did they even go to Europe? I can believe they failed. Also, which of the Chinese auto manufacturers do you expect to see making the leap to exporting to Europe, the UK, or the US? Well, look, we just did a thing. Cherry just got this horrific crash rating from the Australians. They put one into a barrier, and the thing just about crumpled up like a piece of paper. And that's going to be, you know, the big thing that the Chinese are going to face. Unquestionably, some Chinese manufacturers are going to survive, and they'll probably do well. You know, it's inevitable that it's going to happen, but, you know, it's going to take another 10 to 20 years for that to happen.
Yeah. I mean, the democratization of this technology, you can buy the stuff off the shelf now, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot more to it than that. So, yeah, it's going to be a while.
There's a difference between bolting a whole bunch of different parts that you bought from suppliers together and having a well-integrated, well-synthesized automobile.
Absolutely.
There's two very big differences.
And a vision for what that should look and feel like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if they keep designing around the back seat, then we don't have to worry very much, because it's going to be a while.
I can tell you it's hard enough just with coffee machines.
DC Auto Geek wants to know, any automotive insights on the Korean free trade agreement? Well, it went through, along with two other free trade agreements. What was that, Panama and Colombia, too, I think? But the Korean one, amazingly, is, I think, the first and only time the UAW's ever been in favor of a free trade agreement. They came out in favor of this because they made a couple of demands, and that got included in the contract, so they're happy. And I think they're the only union in favor of this, or one of the very few unions that isn't. So there's my insight. It's union approved, at least in this case. Dr. Botox says, here's an F1 question. When the safety car is deployed, do the drivers drop down a few gears to keep the revs off to burn off the fuel, or do they keep the revs down to save the engine? I think they keep the revs down because behind the safety car they go slow. I think that's the answer. The real question is, when do these boneheads in Formula One learn to do a restart? The safety car pulls off, one or two cars are there, and everybody else is miles behind. I mean, it's like...
They just throw the flag and say, have at it, whatever.
That's the thing I don't get. Hey, we've got more phone calls coming in. Ben, let's bring in another.
Peter D., what's the other guy look like? Is he some muscle from Cleveland? Give me a call. This is Youngblood.
Hey, Youngblood. I explained that earlier. It was an accident.
You have a nasty gash above your eye, for those who didn't hear the story.
Yeah, 24 stitches a week ago Tuesday, and I look a lot better. I'm feeling better, but it was, I don't recommend it.
No, you don't want to recommend that. Okay, Baja Busta says, question for Jack. Being born and raised, living in Seattle, we're known for our coffee asphyxiation. I love trying new stuff. Do you have a website we can order from?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You can go to greatnorthernroasting.com, or the abbreviation, which is greatnorroco.com. And that's unique to hear that from Seattle. Seattle is very steady and not on too many progressive coffee guys' radar right now. They don't like Seattle. They like Portland and San Francisco, as a matter of fact.
Oh, interesting.
So, yes, I'd be more than happy to spend some time.
Mitch says, hey, Roaster Jack, I roast my own coffee. Where are the best beans being grown?
In high-altitude farms by people who care. I'm sorry I can't give you a definitive place, one of my people, I get this question a lot, what's the best coffee? And it's very much like, what's the best beer? What's the best wine? It's the one you like. And I don't mean that as
That's a great answer.
Oh, I don't mean that I don't have an answer for you, but there's a lot to be said about knowing what you don't want in your food. And coffee is a lot like wine. As a matter of fact, we steal all of our vocabulary from the wine industry.
Is that right?
Yeah, all us beverage guys run together. And
so you talk about the nose of the coffee?
We do. There's a few things that we have to pay attention to, because we don't get to fetch the premium that wine does. You can't collect coffee like you can collect wine. But it does. We do have the luxury of being able to cross a lot of barriers and show people that It's possible to make coffee do things that most people never even considered available to come out of a cup.
Wow. Okay, Mark O'Grady wants to know, Mr. Davis, could you please ask him what the biggest mistake consumers like me make when brewing coffee at home?
Quite often, it's not taking control of the brewing process, allowing a machine to do more of it. I love simplicity in using a countertop, you know, $15 or $20 machine that you can set to run in the morning. But when you take control of how much you're using, how much coffee, how much water, measure by mass, not by volume, and control the temperature, you will see a completely different cup than what you get out of the off-the-shelf equipment.
Well, isn't the quality of the water important, too?
Absolutely. There's a lot to be said for water.
Because I was going to open a coffee shop called It's the Water, Stupid. And I envision, you know those big drums of water you have delivered? I envision this super trick, highly engineered system where they're with quick release, like dry break fittings.
Right.
So when one of the water jugs dried out, you just pull it out, put a new one in. And the selling premise was the water made the coffee taste better than the guy down the street. So, Roaster Jack, why don't we engineer that?
I'll give you the secret right now.
It's H2O.
It's H2O at 150 TDS, which means 150 parts per million. I've got a machine in...
What do you mean, 150 parts per million of what?
Of hardness. Measurable hardness in the water. If you use reverse osmosis water, this goes back to the viewer's question. If you go out and buy RO water, Culligan water, or you have a reverse osmosis system at home, the water's hurting the coffee because it's too pure.
Okay.
So you need some hardness. And quite often, city water is quite good as a hardness rating. It's important in beer. It's important in pizza dough. I want to say it was California Pizza Kitchen that really made people pay attention in the restaurant industry when they started spreading around and recognized that the East Coast pizza did not taste anything like the West Coast pizza, and they engineered their water to be exactly what they were getting out of their original kitchens. And now everybody...
Back East, you mean?
Right, everybody...
Which comes out of the Adirondacks.
Yeah.
I mean, the people in New York City will tell you, they've got the best water in the world.
And being out West was amazing because the stuff in there's so much thermal activity. The hot springs that are out there, just the geothermal activity in the ground changes what the water does to you. Even just by being around it and inhaling the steam, it's pretty wild.
Do in California, inhale the steam?
They do a lot. Just because you can't doesn't mean you should.
Hey, we got another phone call coming in here. Ben, let's get to it.
This is Jeff W. from Albany, New York. My question for Peter and John this week is in regards to Sergio's announcement, or there was an announcement this week that Chrysler is going to replace both the Dodge Grand Caravan and the Avenger next year with some sort of a yet-to-be-released crossover. Just wanted your thoughts on that. And does Sergio or Fiat have any idea of what they're doing with the Dodge brand, or what are they trying to do with the Dodge brand? Thanks.
Well, you know, I think the size of Chrysler, they can get by with a town and country van. Whether or not the Dodge people have a caravan to sell, I don't think it matters. So I agree with Sergio on that because they're not out of the woods yet.
No, no.
They are not out of the woods yet, and he needs to focus his resources. And marketing a separate Dodge nameplate van to him doesn't make sense, and I agree with him. Now, as far as where Dodge is going, they've got that compact car coming in the spring to compete against Cruise and Focus. And if it's anything less than a home run, they are in trouble.
Yeah. I agree with you, what you said earlier. You know, Fiat came in, and they're big brand proponents. And they say, no, you don't badge engineer. We don't do that. It's not true to the brand. So I agree with them. It's probably a smart idea to get rid of the Dodge Caravan and keep the town and country. Town and country, even though the sales quite aren't to what the Caravan is, the revenue is much higher because the fully loaded town and countries go for top dollar. But having said that, half the volume of that platform is out of Dodge. So how many of those people can they move into Town and Country to keep its volume up? And then when Dodge gets this new crossover slash minivan, you know, that's the real question. Do they hurt the volume of that van plant that they've got in Canada or not? But I think fundamentally you got to bite the bullet and say, no, if we're going to be true to a brand, it's got to have unique products. We're not going to badge engineer stuff. So I think that's a good move for them. Let's see. We've got another question from Jeff W. for you, Jack.
Okay.
In your opinion, does Buick need a sedan larger than the Buick LaCrosse in its lineup? Something like a Chrysler 300 competitor.
Yes, but I don't know how to do it. Where's the Electra? Where's the Riviera?
Yeah.
Well, those are two names. You know, if Buick, I wrote this on the site a couple years ago. If Buick's going to do a hybrid or electric, why not call it the Electra?
Yeah,
duh.
Right, the duh.
You know,
right.
But don't be surprised if you see a Riviera concept here in the next year, if not sooner.
I wouldn't be surprised, and this is just me guessing, if there's not a Riviera four-door coupe a la the A7 or Mercedes style.
I wouldn't be surprised if we see something at Detroit like that.
But I wonder about its question, too, is the LaCrosse has got to be about the same size as a Chrysler 300 already.
You know, LaCrosse design is wearing very well.
Extremely well.
On the road.
I agree.
It is wearing very well, and it's each time I see one, I say, boy, those guys did a great job.
I totally agree. I like the car now more than when it came out.
I like the car. I remember when they showed it to the media in the Heritage Center, and it was just like the worst possible lighting, and it was just like, really? And then when I saw it in the flesh, it was better, and now I think it's one of the most handsome cars
I agree.
Being offered for sale in this country.
In terms of what, to Jeff W.'s question, what's actually pretty slick is taking a Lucerne and dropping it and putting some nice wheels on it and stripping everything off of it. They look great.
Huh. Interesting.
And you can get them a lot cheaper than something brand new.
Hey, let's bring in another phone call here, Ben.
Yeah, John, this is Rick from San Diego. Deming stuff. Yeah, remember, it's a continuous journey, continuous improvement. I'm glad you mentioned Deming instead of many of the Japanese followers that did bring his ideas to light and all that, but he was the master. And for Buick, I wish I'd not only focus on luxury cars, but just build great cars. Like Jack was saying, get back to your roots. Just build great cars, whether they're luxury, performance, or whatever, and everything else will take care of itself. Thanks.
Thank you.
Great comments. John Manoogian asks, have either of you read Bill Vlasic's book, Once Upon a Car? He says it's great. Hmm. And I have read it. In fact, John, we've got an out-of-line coming up soon where I did an interview. Chip's giving me the signal in 2 weeks. In 2 weeks, we got an out-of-line that'll run Sunday morning and on television and on our website, and it's a great discussion that we've got. Bill got some great information. In fact, I think the big news that came out of it is General Motors wanted to merge with Ford back when Rick Wagoner was there and everything was melting down and falling apart. They literally called a meeting to meet with Ford and wanted to merge together, and boy, I'm glad that didn't happen. Let's see. Eric Ambrose asks, after the Japanese companies penny-pinch their suppliers, do you think they'll start outsourcing, hopefully move to the USA and Canada? And he goes on and says some other stuff, but I think you're going to absolutely. Look, I'm hearing feedback from suppliers who say that Honda's turning into what GM, Ford, and Chrysler were like 6 years ago. Really putting pressure on them to cut costs.
It's because of the yen, and
right.
they've run out of road here.
They really have.
And Hyundai's going to blow by both Honda and Toyota in the U.S., I think.
They're so close. They've surpassed Nissan. They're knocking on Honda's door.
But I think I think Hyundai is going to supersede Toyota within 5 years, if not sooner. Seriously, in volume, wow. Everything.
Wow. So, Ben, I think we've got one more phone call. Let's bring that in.
Hey, George from LA again. Just listening to you guys talk about electric cars. And I said, but you're showing your age. It's not just about whether or not it makes sense to get it for the relative price of gas savings. It's about the it's sort of the same reason somebody buys an Apple computer. It's a better thing. It's a better, cooler thing. People don't want to mess with gas. I think especially after the big Gulf oil spill, people's opinions about gas, especially the next generation, has just really been dramatically changed. And people are going to buy electric cars like the Leaf. Well, the coat is ugly. It looks like a Hyundai from the 70s. But good-looking cars, as long as the styling is there, just because they don't want to mess with the stink of gas. Anyway, thanks.
Spoken like a true Californian.
Well, you know, I agree that, you know, if you can afford it and if it fits your driving style, an electric's a great way to go.
Fine.
Unfortunately, they're very expensive, and, you know, most people can't afford that. You know, and, you know, as we keep pointing out, is hybrids don't sell very well. They're like 2% of the market. And that ought to open up everyone's eyes. Even, you know, when you look at Ford with the MKZ hybrid, where they'll give you the hybrid for no extra cost over the gasoline version, only 1 out of 5 people take it. And that's at no extra cost. So I understand why we want to get off oil and all that other stuff, but, man, it's the electric car is only going to be for a very slim segment of the market, or as we talked about, at least for now.
I'm a little disappointed in the light hybrid or the even the Volt-style extended range not being available in light-duty commercial. I love the Transit Connect. I think I hate the name, but I love the vehicle. And
the next generation Transit Connect is very cool, by the way.
I'd love to see something with a Volt-style drivetrain in that package.
I think you'll see that in a lot of the city delivery stuff.
It would be really fun. And you could scale it up and scale it down.
Don't forget, Ford made that pivotal decision to bring the C-Max only as a hybrid.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And that's a really, that's an excellent vehicle. I think people aren't prepared for that. That's going to be very popular, I think.
Well, you know, Ford's going after Prius with that vehicle.
Yeah.
It's, in fact, I just wrote a whole column in Words about this. You know, I was at the Grand C-Max launch in Europe, and they explained to us how the C-Max wouldn't make sense for the American market. It should be the Grand C-Max because America wants bigger vehicles and yada, blah, blah, blah. And then 2 months later, they go, nah, never mind. It's going to be the small one, and it's only going to be a hybrid. But so what I wrote in Words is, you can read this two ways. You know, either Ford product development or product planning, rather, is in total disarray, or these guys are pretty nimble and agile. And that's how I'm reading it. I think they recognize that with the Prius, Toyota's had this mantle of environmental goodness. And they have found, Ford did, that companies that are perceived to have the best fuel economy are also perceived to have the best quality and the best value and the best resale, and they're the best corporate citizen. And when they looked at Prius, they went, why is Prius working and no other hybrid sells well at all? It's the one exception. And it's because it's only available as a hybrid, and it has a unique silhouette to it. And only as a hybrid is important because if you're selling hybrids and non-hybrids to the eco-friendly crowd that wants to buy a hybrid, they want to show the world that they've got a hybrid. Yeah. And boy, the Prius does that. So I think Ford, by going with the C-Max, has a unique silhouette. It will only be as available as a hybrid and a plug-in. And of course, if that's what you're going to do and you got to go for the Prius's throat, you got to get the best fuel economy possible. So you want the small one, not the big one, because the small one will get better fuel economy.
Well, and look what the Prius does for everybody who drives a Sequoia or a Tundra. Non-car people recognize that logo on that. That's a big car, and it doesn't really do anything different than an Expedition or a Suburban.
That's right.
But it's from that same family.
Well, and that's what I said. Well,
yeah, exactly.
What Ford found is, you know, perception is reality. Hey, we ought to wrap it up here. It's been a great discussion. Roaster Jack, how cool is this having you here? This is great, man.
Thank you very much.
We hear we've been talking about you all the time. Roaster Jack, this is Roaster Jack. And here he is.
Remember, folks, greatnoroco.com.
And remember, you can always get Peter's stuff at autoextremist.com. You can follow him at twitter.com/autoextremist. Same goes for us. Check us out at Facebook. Check us out at Twitter. Also, check out our website. We've changed the URL. It's now just autoline.tv. We've got a new video player there. It'll go full screen. It's a whole new look to our website. We still got a few more tweaks to do to it.
It's wonderful.
But it's pretty cool.
I got to tell you.
It's a big step up for us.
It took a long time
to get there. And join us again next week. We're going to have Jack Hollis from Scion. Boy, we got a bunch of stuff to talk to him about. See what they need to do to get everything going again. But thanks, everybody, for having tuned in.
Go Tigers.
Visit our website, autolinedetroit.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily automotive news fix with AutoLine Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with AutoLine Detroit. That's all there and much more at AutoLineDetroit.tv.
AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. And by Hyundai. Experience the 2011 Hyundai Sonata today at HyundaiSonata.com.